Someone told me you'd be here, whispering these familiar things, talking to my little pets, smoking the same old cigarettes. I would have laughed. I saw you last in summertime. You said you hated long goodbyes. You said there's nothing to explain in every life alone. Said I'd be so dumb after all the sleepless nights when I turned on all the lights. I would have hit them, but I have turned the other cheek. My voice trembles, my knees are weak, and you beat me once again, and I know what happens then. You raise the ante.
You are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I am Nasa, and this is Ink and Worm, All Things Reading and Writing. Today, I am going solo, so if anything seems a little wonky, please forgive me. We are joined in the studio by my good friend, Dan Roder.
Hey, hey, hey.
Woo! Now, I am reading off of his Instagram bio, so he is a writer, performer, boy becoming man, seeking man becoming wolves, karaoke enthusiast.
Yeah, that's not right.
Oh, man, I love that song. I actually once got into trouble with my boyfriend because of that song.
Which, Werewolf Bar Mitzvah?
Yeah, Spooky okay. Scary. We were having a serious conversation, and I was like, dude, you got to check this song out. It's amazing. And he was like, Nasa.
Like, not right now.
Yeah, this is not the place. Right. But I'm like, yeah, but it's great. You have to listen.
I'm glad you caught the reference. It's very nice to know. But it's just so true.
It's definitely.
It's a transition in my life I'm always trying to make.
To try to get
boy
men
becoming
who...
man, finding a man becoming a wolf.
Rawr. Okay, so before we were on air, I was actually saying that I really wanted to discuss our meeting story because it's
Oh, right, yeah.
In my mind, hilarious. So I'm going to go ahead and jump in with that. So if you wanted to tell your side of it, or I could just begin with mine, I suppose.
Start with yours, but first I'm going to take a little, because of men becoming wolves, a little prep break. This is a miniature ad for mainly gay men, but all sexually active people who want to be safe from HIV infection. PrEP is a wonderful pill. You can get it for free. Yeah, ask any questions if you have them. Definitely take care of your sexual health. Awesome.
Yeah.
Washed down with purple haze, courtesy of NASA.
I'm sure that's exactly what the doctors would recommend.
Totally would recommend that.
Like, obviously, take it with purple haze. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that is very important. And I was also seeing it around, like, on the subways and everything, which is great. I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just a cool preventative measure.
Yeah. And I was at the Callan Lord like a few weeks ago at this point, and they were saying that within the next 2 years, they're going to make it an injection that you take like every 3 months.
Ooh.
So no more daily pill taking for me, mama. It's going to be pretty great.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, but back to our origin story.
Oh, yes, right. The origin story. Boom. So this is, for me, I always find it really funny because we could have very easily not met if it weren't for my personal obsession with unsweetened iced green tea. Mm-hmm. Because Dan used to work at Crumbs back when Crumbs was in its, I suppose,
heyday?
Like peak.
Yeah. Sort of the Camelot moment where, you know, it looked glorious, but everything was slowly rotting underneath.
I think the other side of the peak is when we met. Is like it was still up there.
People were still crazy about it.
Yeah.
But it had just been sold from its original owners to new people.
Starbucks, I think.
Well, Starbucks, they did like a We Proudly Serve thing, but it was actually like the business, Purple Haze, was bought by the former CEO of one crooked fashion company or another.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, he failed over there, so that they brought him over here.
The underbelly, I did not know. Yeah, right. But what I remember is that Crumbs, I keep wanting to say Dunkin' Donuts, and I'm like, that's definitely wrong. Crumbs was having a summer special, which was $1 any sized iced drinks.
It was pretty great.
It was pretty great. But that was problematic because it's so easy for me to go in and be like, large, unsweetened iced green tea, light on ice, which was just super caffeinated NASA.
Right.
Right. But healthy, quotation marks. Healthy caffeine.
Unsweetened.
But you had been... I also felt like I was totally playing the game because if you get 10 drinks, you got a free cupcake, I think.
Oh, yeah. And I was playing everyone on the game.
Yeah.
I like being good at my job. What
that
can I say?
That was very sweet of you. And I would, of course, go in like, within every 10 days, I'd get a free cupcake. And
yeah.
I only paid $10.
Right. And then I think by the end, I was probably like slipping you free stuff, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, definitely. I do remember this, which I was very appreciative of. Oh, my
You're
goodness.
Welcome.
Especially for my love of cupcakes. That was bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would go in and we would just talk for 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Every time, which was funny because I wouldn't go in on my lunch break. I was working at the time, and I wouldn't go in on my lunch break. I would just be like, I'm going to run and get a tea and be gone for like 40 minutes. I think at one point I was gone for like an hour and a half, and I was like, shit, 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 shit.
I'm not surprised because we didn't really, I mean, we had a small morning rush, but I think that most sensible people had boycotted Crumbs in favor of more ethical local, you know.
I didn't even know that. I just liked giant cupcakes.
Oh, I don't blame you. I would be right there in line with you if I weren't working. You know, it's like, but yeah. And then my origin story with Crumbs is that my first day was this other girl, Ashley's last day.
Mm-hmm.
And she was from North Carolina and she was moving back to North Carolina and very happy about this. She was done. So done with Crumbs. So done with New York. And, so I just watched her, like, you know, like, sitting around that whole day. And then one of her regulars came in, and she, like, suddenly, she, like, adjusted her hip, and she became a new person. And she did, like, a, you know, 1-2-3-step turnball heel. And she was like, hi there, how are you?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And I just had this fantasy. I was like, you know, why don't I be the Southern Belle that I've always known I could be? I've read, like, how many Tennessee Williams plays. I grew up on the border, you know, between the South and the North. I felt, you know, it was time to achieve a personal fantasy and, you know, hopefully earn some respect doing it. Because I just like doing a good job at things, even when my job is to be, like, a capitalist overlord. So, yeah, I was just, like, very flirty and gregarious and, like, you know, hoping more gay men would come in because it was the East Village so that yes. I could... you know, tighten my apron girdle and, you know, sell some shit.
And put on your best Tennessee.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Which, you know, isn't that great, but it's serviceable. And it kept you for 45 minutes.
It did. It kept me for very long. Yeah, surprisingly, never got in trouble at my work. This is how low-key they were. It was summertime, though. There's nothing to do at a school over summer.
No. Yeah.
Unless they have summer school, which this one did not.
Laugh at the reject pile.
I know. Not even. It was that got me addicted to BuzzFeed because I would just sit there. I'd be like, there's nothing to do. I want to look productive. Oh,
I've
well.
I always thought BuzzFeed did sound like a drug.
It is. It is. Because they give you just enough information, man. Like, just enough new information. And you don't have to read any of it. It's very quick, immediate. Like, it's problematic.
BuzzFeed is like the Reality Bites 1994 film, devil of my, it's like the embodiment of, what's it, Stiller, Ben Stiller.
Oh,
Ben
Yeah.
Is, but like, cause my roommate will always be like, you know, when I'm low or poor or whatever, he'll be like, you would be so great as a BuzzFeed article writer. And I'm just like, no, away from me, Satan.
I've debated being, well, okay, first of all, I have no internet contact, so that would be completely out of the question. I cannot write for BuzzFeed until I get my own internet content.
Wow.
Yeah, you have to like have stuff beforehand.
Like pre-existing.
Yeah, you can't just go to BuzzFeed and be like, hey, I'm funny.
I'm funny. Guys,
you should use, look, I can get pictures and make comments about them. Like, no, you have to like have material.
Well, you could do that pretty easily.
I mean, know.
Just like take it on as a job for a month, a personal job.
Yeah, it would be like a year's worth of prep time most, like maximum. I'm sure right now they have a harder vetting system than like 5 years ago.
Perhaps so.
But the thing is, they own all your things once you become...
Yeah, they have a really terrible ownership contract that, so many places do.
I know. That's why Cracked is where I'd want to go, but they have a really bad website.
Oh, yeah. It always riddled makes you with like bugs. An article. Why?
I know.
Or like, you just, I don't want to turn the page that much.
Well, no, for me, it's just this problem of like, I'll be on it and then it'll just be like, add. And I'm like, come on, Cracked. You guys have been around since like the early 90s. I remember buying you in magazine form. Get your act together.
I mean, I think that's the reason why they don't have their act together, because they were running on hybrid for a while and then they like switched over, but it's not their domain. Yeah. Like, you need to bring in new people, but new people ruin things. I don't know.
I'm also like sassing to internet like things that I waste my time on, like websites that I also very much like and love and waste my time on a lot. So I suppose I'm doing that thing where you're like, I'm acting like I'm better than they are, but I'm not.
Yeah. Because I could stick my neck out and be like, I don't read them. But I read anything that pops up on my Facebook. And I am notorious for watching seasons of old reality TV series that have been running for too long.
Yes, so, me too. Me too. We have to have much conversations about that. All right, great. So switching over to writing. You recently created like a meetup group or a group for writers under 25, right?
It is in process. It's for writers, mainly for stage and screen, mainly for stage, 25 and under, which is why it's named Mom's Insurance.
Although I will say ow.
Wait. Oh, on the, just like you're over the limit.
I'm over the limit. I mean, I know.
Well, it stinks that we're... But
no, I understand what you mean, because when you're younger, when you're just starting off, it's hard to find support groups that don't kind of not necessarily look down on you, but like have this feeling of, oh, well, I've been there, or like,
right.
Oh, well,
or that don't tap your money, or that don't, you know,
yeah,
expect you to be part of this institution.
Yeah.
I am really against big institutions, especially in New York, which is a lot of why I started it. I think that all of these things, if you are to create the most nurturing, talented environment, it should be free. Because economic barriers keep so many talented people out. And it should be deinstitutionalized so that anyone can come in rather than it being some like exclusive club where you have to take X number of classes to be a part of the group. And, you know, and that's mainly because I try to have a sense of history about these things, about New York and about performing arts. And I look back and I, you know, the Second City people, they all just got together and just started making shit together and found their own aesthetic together. They didn't go to any class, you know, they didn't, 301 didn't change their lives, you know, it was like they made 301 on their own.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think there's more longevity in that in terms of creating a lasting institution. Same with Cafe Chino on the like theater side of things, where like all of these like young people my age would go in and they'd just create play after play after play. And most of them stunk, and most of the time they were, like, high on everything. But, you know, in 10 years or so when they mellowed out, it turns out that they were Sam Shepard. It turns out they were Lanford Wilson. It turns out that they were, like, you know, all these very impressive people who did not pay that much money to colleges or to programs or to teachers to learn how to write. They just did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wanted to take that, claim that space back, you know.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Small group by small group.
Is it one of those situations where, like, I mean, obviously it's just starting, so
yeah,
it's probably primarily your friend group, so your age group. But is it one of those situations where in a foreseeable future, like, somebody 17 or 16 or 15 would be encouraged
to go for it?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. I mean, the good news for me is that the groups that I start typically have a long life to them. Mm-hmm. I don't, because maybe I'm just like an anal retentive, like,
I would say it's because you're very sociable.
Oh.
Like in a good way. Like, well, I meant that completely as a compliment, but like you're the kind of person who could hold a customer for 45 minutes when they went in for $1 iced green tea.
Yeah, well, the O was from, I'm like a secret introvert. I'm a stealth introvert. In that, like, it's just very difficult for me to leave my apartment. Like, oh, gosh, I wonder what I'd be before internet. I don't know if that would make me more social. I wonder if it would take impetus away from me staying in the apartment all the time, or if I'd become, like, the most prolific writer known to man because I was terrified of everyone else. Or I just don't know. I guess to some extent there are barriers that a lot of people have in regard to sociability that I don't. You know, different barriers. But when I want to make something, when I'm filling a role, really, when someone's like, okay, here's your role in this social situation, go out and do it. I'm like, great, let's do it, let's go. And I'm very ambitious, and like I like bringing people together, and I like learning about people. But when it's just like, hey, Dan, do you want to come out to this party? We're just going to hang out. I'm like, I just don't know.
No, but it's hard to get yourself out for it. I am in that same boat. Although I went through this period of time where I tried only saying yes to people.
Oh.
It was great, actually. It got me out of my house a lot. Like,
oh, well, that's good.
And it got me doing things I normally wouldn't, which was really fun.
Right.
But then basically once you get what you need from that, like I would go through like a 6-month period of just like, I'm only going to say yes.
Uh-huh.
And then I would end up with a job, or I would end up with like a boyfriend. Usually I ended up with a boyfriend.
Isn't it sad?
I know. I wish that jobs came to me as easily as men.
Amen.
Well, I wish that I seeked jobs, I suppose is what I should say, the way that I seek men.
It's just not as interesting.
It is, but it's just not as immediate. The reward is not as right there as kissing a pretty boy on the face. but yeah, so once that would happen, I would usually do the same thing where I would just like slowly get myself back into my blanket and be like, no, I'm good this weekend. I'm just going to play video games.
Yeah, that's a great, God, I love that. I do. But you know, when you're making a writing group, it's not necessarily the best rut to be in. So I'm like clawing my way out a little bit by a little bit.
Yeah.
The thing with these groups, you just got to have meetings. And you just have to bring people into the same room for long enough that they collectively come up with a coherent idea of what they want. And so that's the phase we're in right now.
That's great.
And I think it requires me to be a good listener, but also know when to unify people, whether to just be like, okay, enough of the confusion. This is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the plan. And then we'll change it later on. But yeah, so I'm slowly bringing that together. I have people in my network who are more social and connected than I am within the playwriting scene, and they've been great in bringing people on that I didn't know about that now I do, and I'm excited about that. But in making any kind of group that you want to have like a lasting impression with and that you want to actually be of use to like several different communities with, like I'm looking at us and I'm like, ooh, we are very college educated, we are very white, we are very, and I just,
yeah.
I want life, mama. You know, I want a diverse group. I want different experiences. I want to find the people that have moved to New York and found themselves sort of stuck because they didn't come in with some preset community. Because that's who I was. I did not go to school in New York. I went to UMBC in Baltimore, which is great for science. Mm-hmm. And I went on a full art scholarship. So, you know, I was a little out of water there. I sort of was like a Rambo in a Jane Austen novel. And I knew that no career would come of it, in theater at least. So I moved up to New York my freshman year summer, and I just lived here during breaks. So I'd like be in school for the semester. The semester ends, I'd go back to New York. So I came here and I had like no friends. I wasn't 21, so I couldn't go to bars to meet people. So yeah, a lot of the time I'd meet people through work, like we met. Mm-hmm. At the same time I was working at Crumbs, I worked at Shakespeare in the Park, and that made a lot of great connections.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, Shakespeare in the Park is a great place to work for one summer. You meet a lot of really awesome people who are on their way to something else as well, and it's a, you know, fun environment for a while, and I had a great time with it. So yeah, I want to find those people who are similarly stuck. And Nace is on a little drink break right now, so
No, you can keep talking. I just can't drink back here.
And I just had nothing more to talk about.
Oh, I see. Oh my goodness. I timed that terribly. I've been having a cough. Fine. In case anyone couldn't tell, I'm a little bit sick.
I have a cold too.
It's the worst, right? Yay, twinsies. But like I'm trying not to cough into this thing and I felt the fit coming.
Oh, and you were like, oh girl.
Yeah, I was like, I need water or else I'm just gonna be like
right.
Like nonstop, and I always hate that. Let me see. I had a couple of other questions about the group. Oh, what was the ultimate, like, what is your ideal goal with this?
The ideal goal for this, I want to, okay, so as a young playwright, there are a lot of, like, writing groups, I guess, mm-hmm. that you can get into. And I think they were designed for people who just had an undergraduate degree, but now as there are so many people who are getting playwriting degrees, it's become more and more competitive, and it's more likely to go to people who have already been to a master's program. So there's one at Ensemble Studio Theater called Youngblood. There's one, there's a Page 73, which is another writer's group.
I actually know that group, but I still laugh every time I hear the name.
So they're all great and none of them will accept anyone my age, and I don't blame them for it because there is a learning curve, but I guess this group is addressed towards that learning curve like giving us a group like the groups that we can't get into before we get into the groups.
Yeah,
when we're able to get into
a
them.
Support system when you're starting off and making
your
mistakes.
Terrible plays.
Yeah, you're making obvious mistakes, but you need to make those obvious mistakes to make the great plays.
Right, definitely.
To be Sam Shepard.
Yeah, or Tennessee Williams.
Who knew you were Tennessee Williams all along? The greatest episode of Scooby-Doo.
If it weren't for you meddling playwrights. Yeah, Tennessee Williams had a great sense of history about himself because he marked everything before the Glass Menagerie is like apprentice plays or something like that. Mm. Some kind of self-derogatory term about his early work, which I think is great.
Yeah.
I think there's a sense of ownership that comes with that. And, you know, I'm definitely down to write more apprentice plays.
I actually want to talk about one of your apprentice plays. But before I do, I have one more question about the group, which I hope it's just something that popped into my mind, and then I'm going to make a quick announcement. But So regarding your group, since it's 25 and under, is it one of those situations when once somebody says age is over 25, obviously they're still part of it? Or are you hoping to kind of get somebody on their feet and set to like apply to things outside. I'm sorry if I'm asking questions where you're like, I haven't thought of this yet.
We've been talking about it, but we don't have a clear-cut answer. I mean, my solution is that when they turn 26, we have a great party for them, and then we send them onto a boat with a couple of pills and just push them off.
And, pills and maybe a couple of blank notebooks and just good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Goodbye into the next world. No, it would be, yeah, I think that the way that Youngblood does it, because theirs is under 30, it's like you can be there through the season in which you turn 30. And I think that's the way we do it too. We want to keep it young, and I want to keep it so that I know when I'm done administrating the group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, sort of like our government, it's really great when there is a turnover.
Yeah.
And I think that it would be very easy to take this group and, you know, keep the cohort that's in it and, like, you know, push us towards, like, the end of the world and just move on forever. But I worry about attrition, and I worry about non-inclusion, and I want to make sure that it's a space that's open to new people and also not allowing old people to fester there and die.
Like, you old 35-year-olds.
No, yeah, it's just you want to move on to different projects. You want to move on to different
Yeah, definitely.
Groups. You need that push. And I think when the push is built in, it's nice.
Yeah.
And like when you graduate. And there's also no way that it'll ever become like this inflated. Like, it's not going to become, you know, a large conglomerate nonprofit theater in the heart of New York producing Daniel Radcliffe and revivals of Thornton Wilder, but you know,
yeah,
that was oddly specific. But you know, that whole sort of like that weird thing where a thing grows beyond the size it should be and stops serving the population it was designed to serve.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think that's amazing. And I think that's something that's, what am I trying to say here? By encouraging people to head out and by keeping it young, I think it'll keep the spirit.
The
thank
juice.
You.
Yeah.
Yes. I was trying to find a way to not be like, it'll keep it hip.
Keep it hip and young and fresh.
You
like
could
us,
tell
the young people.
You could tell I have a problem as the 26-year-old. I'm like, yeah, it'll keep it funky fresh, yo.
Okay. That's probably exactly what I'd say. I think I did say that at some point.
Just very quickly, I want to do a quick air promo. I'm just going to read this, so. Get ready to dance with Radio Free Brooklyn's newest partner, Secondhand Records, New York City. It's the newest addition to our Radio Free Brooklyn studio in Bushwick. Keep your party going with a collection of new and old 45s, LPs, and 12 singles at great Bushwick-friendly prices. Find your favorite vinyl dance hits from every generation, funk to house, jazz to techno, and all the beats in between. If you can dance to it, Secondhand Records, New York City sells it.
Ooh, baby.
I know.
And that's right upstairs.
That is right upstairs. Visit the shop to buy, sell, and trade your favorites 7 days a week from 12 to 8, or shop anytime online at www.secondhandrecordsnewyorkcity.com. And you can tell that I'm old because I still say the www. You don't need that.
I say the www.
You don't need it.
You don't need it, but I say it.
You don't even need the .com anymore, but...
I suppose not.
That's secondhandrecordsnewyorkcity.com, now located at the new Radio Free Brooklyn Studios at 1345 DeKalb Avenue, right near the Central Avenue M stop in Bushwick. And while you're there, listen to some of the great music shows on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Woot.
Also, feel free to donate to our Kickstarter, so you could check that out at radiofreebrooklyn.com. Thank you.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, because I noticed the record store being set up as we...
I know.
In,
I'm really excited. It's totally new. And I used to own a record player back in California, which I have left in California. I'm going to take it home. I'm going to bring it home this time around. Darn
it.
Bring it home. It's a suitcase record player. It shouldn't be that hard to take onto
That's
a plane.
Awesome.
But all my records are back home. I can start my new collection here.
Boyfriends, are you listening? November 12th is my birthday. I want a record player and, like, let's do some Fleetwood Mac and then
Ooh,
Joni Mitchell. I need Joni.
Yes.
I worship Joni Mitchell. We could talk about that for hours.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And then some Laura Marling, some Nico Case.
Cab Calloway for me. Calloway.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
And then throw it back. We could Ella Fitzgerald. There's artists that I need to listen to
Ooh.
That... It's best I listen to them with a record player, I think. So
yeah.
That's a good impetus. to buy me a record player, boyfriend, if you're listening.
Same here. Same here. Christmas gift. I have got that. Ooh. Record player. All right. Wonderful. So I did want to talk briefly about the play that I was in a reading of.
Oh, okay.
Just because I really loved it. I went through this kick of being in a lot of shows this summer. And I was really sad that it was an informal reading because that was probably my favorite show that I was in.
Oh, wow.
It was so good.
Thank you.
You want to talk about young playwrights. Like, I don't know what you're planning to do with it, but it was to me, like, funny and poignant and everything that I could have possibly been like, oh, my God, this is brilliant. This should be seen somewhere. And wow. I was just so... I'm going to have you start off by just kind of giving a brief oversight of what the play is.
Okay. The play is called Becky Ely Got Married. It's in developmental readings right now at the New School, although NASA is the last one we've had of it. So we're prepping for round two, and you'll be getting a call.
Ooh, I'm really excited about that.
I felt the same way about your performance. Aww. I was like, oh! Okay, I'm not gonna sidestep yet. But okay, Becky Ely Got Married. It's about this childhood neighborhood in which three best friends are throwing a wedding for Becky, the central character, and the wedding gets interrupted by war, and the three get like diverted, and then eventually reunited. I guess in a nutshell. And the reason we're hearing this story is because the bastard, who just goes by the bastard, lives in this like nursing home / orphanage and has for like her entire life. And she never knew her mom except for that her name was Becky Ely and a couple of other choice facts. And so she like went on Wikipedia and read everything she could about the era and then, like, really quickly compiled this, like, fictionalized version of her mom. And, yeah, so it's a very hard play to explain.
It also takes place in the 60s and the 80s and the future, and it's all the 60s and 80s and the future as seen by someone who doesn't actually understand what those time periods were.
Yeah.
Which is what I found really interesting. In a sense, it's like talking about... Once again, I'm assigning something to your play, so feel free to be like, that is nothing to do with what it's about. But it's about, like, the 60s, 70s, and 80s were a big part for America, and it was a lot of loss of innocence during that time, and there was a lot of I think, the big changes that we are still kind of dealing with now occurred then. And the fact that it was told by somebody who's looking back at it the way that we would nowadays. Like a misunderstanding of, yeah.
20s and 40s. And
exactly.
And just, like, put these, like, giant narrative arcs over them. Like, this is what was happening here. Yeah, it's about how history works, I guess, to some extent.
Yeah. And it touched on a lot of different things. And I'm being slightly vague because it's still in process. So I'm sure it's going to be changing and changing as we go on.
Yeah.
But I kind of loved the different levels that it dealt with everything.
Thank you. I've got a lot of second act trouble I need to fix. And the funny thing is that writing is hard. That's a funny thing.
Hi, writing is hard.
I started it in 2014 in a reading at Dixon Place. So that was like 2 years before this incarnation of it. And I put it away. I was finishing up my senior year of college after that, and then I had left theater at that time. I do that a lot, and I think that's how I stay in the game. That's how I keep myself spry, to say that I'm quitting.
Which we also need to talk about, but yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how you do it. Just take a complete turnaround. Just be like, that's it. I'm out.
I'm leaving. I'm becoming a liar. I'm done with this. I can't. And then, like, 4 months later, you're, like, back there with your hand in the fridge, reaching for the...
I love that statement. I'm becoming a liar. I can't do this. I can't tell truth. I'm becoming a liar.
But yeah, so I quit, and then I went into, I wanted to switch into TV writing, and I still do, but it was originally going to be a theater-free process. I actually did stand up for like 4 months.
Me too.
Really? Oh, you did? How long were you in it?
I was in it for about, actually around the same thing, around the same time I took a class.
Okay.
On stand-up comedy, and so I was doing it like once a week, maybe twice a week, I guess, twice a week, every week for like 4 months.
Right.
And I have a reel, if I ever so choose, and I have not done anything with it since.
And so it goes. I just went straight into open micing. I did that a lot, and I think that's the reason I stopped. Because, like, within, you're supposed to suck at stand-up for, like, your first 2 years of doing it. And so there's, like, a high attrition rate in that to begin with. But it got to the point where I just saw my limitations. I suppose in that I'm not social enough to be out as much as you need to be out to be doing stand-up and doing it well and, like, in the community and, like...
Yes, that's the problem I was having too. Plus, it's $5 an open mic. So, like,
not
no.
Not if you're smart.
Matter, wait, what?
Yeah, there's a lot of free open mics. You just got to find them.
I have to look for them. Like, no matter
I'll
what.
I'll totally shill for my favorite open mic was at Ang Noir on Thursdays at 7. I think it's called Two in the Bushwick.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's super fun. They give you, last I was there, like, 3 minutes and then 4 if you do a challenge. So they give you like a prompt and you like do just a minute of improv.
Oh my god, wait, I totally want to do this.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Do you want to get back into the open mic game with me?
No.
Okay, that's cool. I'm just going to ask you for the link about that and I'll find somebody else. Because
oh, totally.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, you should definitely go. I can't do it. I love all of the friends I made in mainly Facebook friends that I just watch their stuff. And I'm like, oh my god, you're fantastic. I love you. And like when I'm hopefully a successful writer one day, I can, you know, be like, oh, I remember.
I know you.
Just pull them in because they're all great. But especially the gays. The gays are having a real moment in comedy in Brooklyn
great.
Right now.
Yeah.
Bowen Yang is one of my favorite people. Joel Kim Booster. Like, just like there's a whole list. And I'd be doing a disservice to mention like one person over another. But yeah, I'm just obsessed with them. Julio Torres is so funny. And writes for SNL now. I don't know. Yeah, it's a great scene.
Oh,
like,
that's great.
That I'm like very, very peripherally a part of. Because really, I am more of a writer. And so I went from my 4 months of like stand-up to writing screenplays, and then I was just like, oh, well, there's all these applications for theater stuff, and like, I'm not really into it, but I guess I'll do it, you know, just for like fun or whatever. So I like edited Becky, and I hadn't looked at it in like, and I'd gone through periods of hating it, and like, I just edited it as best I could for like one of the many different playwriting things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, I hate this. And I was like, I have to fix it, and I know how, I just gotta do it. So every deadline, I'd fix it a little bit more. And I'm just now getting all the rejection letters from this process in which, like, I sent in an undercooked play. I think I started with The Public. The Public has an emerging writers group, and it's very competitive and mainly for MFA people. But I was just like, why not?
Yeah.
And so I got my rejection letter from them shortly after. And then all through the spring, I was applying to stuff, and those rejection letters are coming in now. And then I think by the end of all of the applications I'd done, I'd made a somewhat successful rewrite of Becky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really liked the rewrite that I was in.
Right. And then that, I was a fucking workhorse that week.
I know. Like, you rewrote it several times. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was doing new scenes and new stuff. And now I can't do that at all. development is really, really tricky.
Well, that's the important part, I think, of writing, period. Because
writing,
just getting words on paper, that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not super easy, but it's... It's not...
Are you talking about, like, the initial draft? Or...
Yeah, I'm talking the first draft. I'm talking first draft, okay. Sitting there, writing it down. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but, like, it's no pressure. You just sit down and you write it. At least that's been my experience.
Not my experience. It's... Well, for me, it's like, when I'm starting a play, I think the outline and the first 10 pages come really easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then I need to physically harm myself for, like, a week. And then write a new outline. And then I zip through the first draft pretty easily.
Yeah.
But it's usually, you know, terrible.
Well, for me, it's like I can get through a first draft. But I don't know. There's something about you just, I like write. I just write it. I'm like, I'm just going to write this. Mm-hmm. And then you finish it. And I'm like, I never want to look at that again.
No.
Never. I wish that I could hand it to somebody to do the second draft. I just want to be like, you figure that out.
And
I don't
think TV
is like. It makes sense.
One of the many reasons I'm like obsessed with writing for TV is because like, if you're writing the episode, you do the first draft and then you send it to the writer's room, and that's why it's so expedient, and that's why it's so like.
See, and that would be great. And then I could I would have no attachment to it. I would be able to just be like, this is what they do. And then watch it and be like, I guess that's not what happened.
Uh-huh.
But that is probably just my experience.
I mean, really,
to be fair.
It's like a giant steep hill being an early career writer. when you are successful enough that writing becomes your job, I honestly think it becomes a lot easier because you're writing every day. You have so many deadlines. You are entangled in a web of people who need you to write. And I think that alone makes it a lot easier, especially just knowing how you have a sense of history about yourself. And I think having a sense of history is like the most important thing you can do right now as a writer, because everything seems so ahistorical. Like the landscape is changing so much. In terms of like how writers get successful and like what they write about and what mediums they do it for. So like keeping connected to your roots in that is great. And I think when you already have a career behind you, it's very easy to keep connected to your roots because it's like, oh, I remember feeling this before. Like the last time I had a draft I needed to do and I got it done. And like, but in this, it's like you have like all of your jobs and in addition to writing. And so you like slog through, you know, a day of dog walking, and then you get home and you hope you have enough energy and you hope the depression hasn't set in over your head like a thick rain cloud. And then you hope your boyfriends don't call and make you miserable enough that you actually have to go write. And like, you know, it's like this whole process, whereas, you know, like when it's your job, especially as a TV writer, you wake up and you go in the room every morning and you're just there with your people. And, you know, before the fog of depression has even like come close to you.
I always wonder if that's just us thinking of that, though. Like, part of me is like, wouldn't that be...
What if it is actually still harder?
Yeah. What if it's still that challenging, but also it's your job?
But do you get the product done? That's the question.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of like...
I don't necessarily get the product done. When it is my job, whatever my job is, I get it done.
Yeah, because it's kind of the difference between being in a class and having a deadline versus... setting a deadline yourself.
Oh god, my self-set deadline, they're terrible. And that's why collaborative art forms are great for me in particular, because I have many strengths but I have many weaknesses.
Yeah.
And having and procrastination being one of them, I can force people like Sophia, our lovely director, for Becky, to pull people into a room and make them read my stuff and embarrass me and then make me come back a little later. And, like, you know, have the pressure of knowing that they're either going to see the same shit that you already had or they're going to see new shit that, you know, is like, having to impress people is an amazing inspiration. I'm not a writer for writer's sake. I write for an audience. You want to impress people. You want to leave a mark on people. You don't want to disappoint people. You don't disappoint Nina, as they say in Project Runway.
Make it work.
Make it work.
Make it work. Okay, so...
Signers?
I'm going to say, because we're getting close-ish to the end. We're not there yet, but we're getting close-ish.
Okay.
So did you... We did a free write before.
Oh.
Did you want to read? I'm opening the invitation, just so you don't feel like I wrote this scene for nothing.
Oh, I didn't write a scene. I just wrote... Like...
Or I wrote this story, or I wrote this...
Yeah, I mean, I'll streamline it because the prompt was...
I will go ahead and... So the prompt was pick... I did it different, I should say, than what Swan usually does because I am not as big a poetry reader as she is, want, want. I feel like I should be.
Maybe so.
But yeah. One of the things that I really enjoy doing is I'll spot people... And I'll make a story for them. So I thought, wouldn't that be a fun little prompt? So my prompt was pick a person or an event, in case you couldn't remember a person, that you came across in the past week and just write something about it. So it could be an interesting person you saw on the subway. It could be something really shitty that happened to you or wonderful that happened to you. And then just write about it for 5 minutes. So you can go ahead and summarize.
Yeah, I went with event. Because I am a hermit.
You're also, by the way, welcome to read it. We will only respond with a thank you.
Oh, of course. It's really just, it's like it could be an essay, but it's really just more like, this is the thing that happened to me. Like, it's not literary, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But So I saw a movie in theaters, quote unquote, alone for the first time ever on Sunday, I thought. And then I remembered that I'm not going to actually read. I'll like use it as a guideline, but like, let's have a conversation.
Yeah, totally fine.
So it was actually the second time ever. I thought it was the first, but it was not. I'm not a movie person. I have a long-haul attention span. I love TV for that reason. I love this new era of streaming.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, life would never get better than, like, the America's Next Top Model marathons that they play on Saturdays, where you just get to, like, live in a world for, like, 10 hours. But now Taylor Mack is doing his Judy's 24-hour thing. Oh, God, I'm terrible with pronouns. Did you hear about that? The 24 hours of music?
No.
Taylor Mack is a performance artist and just an amazing everything. And they go by the pronoun Judy,
mm-hmm.
Which is the coolest thing ever. It's like all my Judies. Yeah, like not all my girls, not all my boys, all my Judies.
All my
it just
Judies.
Feels right.
Yeah.
And so they curated a 24-hour concert in which each hour is like a decade of, I think, American popular music. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so Judy just did the all 24 hours like in a row last night. I'm like, oh my God. So all these immersive experiences are happening between streaming and Taylor Mack and, like, you know, whatever. But so I don't typically have the attention span for movies, but the first time I saw a movie alone was Merrily We Roll Along. It was the broadcast of the English production a few years back. And this was three, four years ago now. And I was studying abroad in England at the time. And I was miserable. I had, like, no friends.
Uh-huh.
Everyone was, you know, on their own wavelength. And, you know, I'm used to that in life. But it was just, yeah, I was living in this weird pox, and I was taking, like, it was, like, 2 days of classes a week, and the curriculum was, like, supposed to be towards seniors, or their equivalent of seniors, and yet it was, like, freshman level, or if not lower. And I was like, I'm drowning. But I'm obsessed with Sondheim, and it's a Sondheim musical, and I, like, went, and I, like, bawled my eyes out, and it was great. And then this past weekend, I saw Kate Plays Christine at Videology, because I'm obsessed with Christine Chubbuck, who is mm-hmm. the Christine of the title. She was a Sarasota, Florida news anchor who killed herself on air.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah, and there was two movies about her at Sundance, one documentary and one fiction feature. And I saw the documentary, and the fiction feature has, like, an amazing cast. It's, like, Rebecca Hall and Michael C. Hall, who are not related.
Mm.
Both are very attractive. May or may not have a thing before she dies. And then Tracy Letts and Maria Dizia. I'm just so excited for this. I've been trying to pirate them for, like, months and months and months. And then it popped up. And I'm like, fine, I'll do, you know, the right way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she killed herself on air, and her like outro line, she like pretended to, she did a news segment, and then she had like a video segment that the video didn't load on, and so she was just like, well, fuck it. And she like flips to the camera, and she goes, in keeping with our station's policy on blood and guts journalism, I now present to you another first: attempted suicide. And just and I why am I fascinated with that? Why am I fascinated with that is a big question for me.
Mm-hmm.
And because the irony, of course, with this whole obsession with Christine is that her death was made in protest of her station's policy, which was, if it bleeds, it leads. Because she was, like, she wanted to do, like, public interest stories, and they wanted her to, like, chase ambulances. And so...
Wow.
So, like, her death was sort of the two, because it's, like, a human interest story, depression, and blood and guts herself.
Yeah,
she just, like, did the perfect marriage of that. I don't know. It's, like, very compelling. And I guess the similarity, I guess what draws me out of my little box, wherever that may be, would be it England or New York, to see something is seemingly young artistic ambition, because both plays are about, or not plays, I'm so theater-driven, but movies are about, like, young artists who want to get something done and feel like they can, and then one gets it done and feels like they didn't and has a sense of attrition and, like, slowly rots, and then the other explodes.
Yeah.
And it's, I guess I'm looking for myself in the rubble of all of that.
Well, that's a, I don't know, really interesting. That's a really interesting movie.
Yeah. I'm really excited for the night.
Yeah.
I left Kate Plays Christine feeling, like, so beautifully clear-headed and, like, I felt... And I've been smoking a lot of pot.
Well.
And so I was, like, hungover that morning or in a haze or whatever. And I saw the movie and I exited and I felt so clear-headed. And I felt like I could, like, see and appreciate, like, every line of... That actually sounds, like, stoned. But, like, it felt incredibly lucid.
Yeah.
I felt very present and grateful and connected to the earth. And, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead. Okay, I'll go ahead and read mine very quickly, and then we'll do a couple of rapid fires.
Sweet.
So mine is not quite so autobiographical.
Yeah, good. It shouldn't be. I like fiction.
Although it is autobiographical. Fun fact. I was hit by a bike. It was something I've always been afraid of. It was something I'd always be afraid would happen to me. So I guess in a way, I'm glad it's out of the way. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid of... possible traffic. The light was red. Did it just turn red or was it going to become green? While I lay on the street, not moving because I just got hit by a bike. A hand reaches out to me. Are you okay? I realize I must be safe. The crowd around me will at least provide a blockade from the cars. I reach for the hand, then realize, what about the biker? And that is my little story.
Oh, you're just going to leave us hanging there.
I am just going to leave it. The biker was fine.
Oh, that bitch.
I'm
so sorry that happened to you.
No, it was fine. It was partially my fault. I was crossing the street on a red, but there were no cars and the bike seemed far away and I got hit by a bike. Okay. Mm-hmm. Rapid fire questions, which are going to be rapid.
Pop-a-da-pop.
Ah, okay. What is your Netflix video game podcast guilty pleasure? And I include video game for a specific
guilty
reason.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Survivor right now. Before Survivor was America's Next Top Model, I go through a phase of Survivor like every 3 years, and I think I'm going to apply if anyone wants to do my audition film. I think reality TV is great. I think that it shows that the most valuable asset about humanity is humanity. I think that, you know, long after no one values the work that goes into flipping a burger or serving a cupcake or, you know, waiting or doing anything really, I think people will value an interesting character.
Oh, yeah.
And it's sad because, you know, our economy is depleting itself that way, but, you know, having a personality of great size, I feel very welcomed by this new era and intrigued and connected.
I especially like that you're golden aging reality TV shows, in my opinion. It's
yeah.
like early 2000 reality TV shows.
Yeah, they were pretty golden.
That was
I'm
the golden age.
The new seasons of Survivor are still good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's very interesting.
I included, in case for our like regular listeners, you would notice that I included video games in this because Zelda Ocarina of Time is on sale on Wii U for $10.
Wow.
So I bought it and I've been playing it and I'm a third of the way through. This has been a weekend. All right, next question. Was there a book that influenced you in puberty?
In puberty?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I was in my own little, like, I think I was me. Yeah, I was giving myself the acting school treatment because I knew I couldn't afford actual acting school all through high school. So, like, any of those craft books, I, like, probably destroyed my emotional memory with. Yeah, oh, my God, I was terrible.
That's so much more commitment than me, though. I was, like, a derp when I was...
I didn't think I was going to survive, darling. I needed a scholarship to live. It was very life or death for me. But it just so happened that life or death involved, like, you know... invoking the death of many people for the sake of a scene. Emotional memory. I like, yeah. Oh God, the stories. But right. Beyond that, I'd say Angels in America.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds trite, but it's true. It just did. It changed my imagination. It changed my historical perspective of myself and the world around me and like made me feel connected to the universe. It's great.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Okay. I phrase this differently, and I'll go into explanation of it, but what book are you currently not reading? Or rather, a book that you want to read, but you just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Literary fiction, you're bumming the fuck out of me. I have a dog walking client who has a great bookshelf, And I loved the Virgin Suicides. And so I saw The Marriage Plot was there, which is another Jeffrey Eugenides book. And I started reading it, and I'm like, this is terrible. This is terrible. So I guess that's the book I'm not reading. I'm probably not going to read. But if, like, a book I should actually... I've been wanting to get all of Sheila Callahan's plays into my hands so that I can read most of them and then reread the ones that I haven't reread recently enough, because she's just a god and I like need to spend more time with new playwrights in my head, but I don't.
Yeah, I know that problem.
My schedule doesn't line up with the library schedule very well.
Right. It's always frustrating. I am going to ask for the name of that playwright, though, because I also need to read new plays.
Sheila Callahan.
Callahan. Okay.
Yeah, very Irish with a G-H-A-N.
I'll just write that in my notes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she's amazing. Ugh. Like, Women Laughing Alone with Salad.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And she wrote, like, and a lot of women parts.
It was by my school, and it was, like, one of the best things my school's ever done. Although they didn't do a full production of it. Maybe it got too graphic, but it's a pretty graphic play. But I saw a reading of it, and I just became obsessed with her from that. And I wish I had spent, because she was there on campus, I wish I'd spent more time just, like, groveling at her feet.
All right. One more, and then I think we'll probably close it up. What is your favorite brag?
Favorite brag?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What? I don't know.
So, like, you meet someone new at a party, and they're like, tell me something cool about yourself.
My whole life is thunder. I don't know.
That's a good brag, though.
It's a 30 Rock steal.
But, oh, I see.
Actual brag.
Come on. Lived an interesting life.
I have, and that's the problem. It's all behind me. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I have great things ahead. I just have not been working on them yet, and I'm not. I don't, yeah.
I know, and I'm sad we weren't able to touch on that either.
Yeah,
mine was Patrick Stewart jokingly flirted with me once.
Oh.
It's a good brag.
Oh, my God.
A good brag.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
It's solid. It's okay. No pressure. We're all good. We're just gonna
shorts are good.
I know. I feel like I'm gonna break you. All right. Well, thank you for coming on, and thank everybody for listening. So I'm gonna go ahead and begin our music.
Ooh. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Ooh. Oh no, is this working? What's happening?
Are we stuck in here forever? Do we have to?
I didn't hit the on button. All right, and just so you know, I'm going to leave you with a word. Take it or leave it. Sonder.